Now from the KSFR Newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Wednesday, October 23rd.
New Mexico's Supreme Court is in the local and national spotlight today as the High Court heard oral arguments on marriage equality. All 33 county clerks in our state have asked for a definitive legal statement of the constitutionality of same-sex marriage. A few months ago, some county clerks began issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples, asserting that nothing in the state constitution prohibited them from doing so. A lower court concurred. We'll have much more on this story coming up later in At Noon. Santa Fe Mayor David Koss delivered his final State of the City address Tuesday evening at the Convention Center. Koss spoke of notable accomplishments during his 8 years in office.
The living wage, the living river, and marriage equality. These are some of the most memorable accomplishments during my time as mayor. Add to that, millions invested in better parks, trails and bus service, our rail yard, the airport, and other parts of town. Also improvements in managing our water and generating energy. Plus, we've reduced property crime, and together we stood to protect human rights.
Koss also spoke about immigration and recalled that when he first took office, federal agents were actively conducting raids in Santa Fe. The mayor spoke of the city's intervention in curtailing such activity and the need for comprehensive national immigration reform.
We work with Senator Bingaman to hold our government accountable and to get the status of every member of this community who had been taken by the federal police. And so today, in this speech, I want to challenge Representative Steve Pierce. I want him to support immigration reform and stand for what is right in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Santa Fe will elect Koss's successor in the March 2014 municipal election. The New Mexico Municipal League, which lobbies the legislature on behalf of our state's cities, is seeking a return of the state sales tax on food. The Albuquerque Journal reports that the idea has the backing of New Mexico's cities, whose revenues have suffered since the tax on food was done away with back in 2004. Governor Martinez has vowed to veto any new taxes, and the proposal is thought likely to generate opposition from lawmakers concerned about the impact taxing groceries would have on lower-income New Mexicans. Former Albuquerque City Councilor Mike McEntee has announced he's running for Congress from the 1st Congressional District. The Republican former air traffic controller is seeking the GOP nomination to challenge first-term Democrat Michelle Lujan Grisham. McEntee's campaign website says a change is needed in Congress, quote, after embarrassing government shutdowns, increasing taxes on middle-class families, and a regulatory market that stifles job creation in New Mexico. McEntee unsuccessfully ran for mayor of Albuquerque in 2001. In other political news, there's officially a third New Mexico Democratic candidate for governor, as State Senator Howie Morales of Silver City on Tuesday joined the race. Morales launched his candidacy in his southwest New Mexico hometown, saying he's ready to challenge, quote, a political system that no longer works for our people. Morales says improving the state's education system and its economy are his top priorities. He was appointed to the state Senate in 2008 and later won election that year and re-election in 2012. Placing prisoners in solitary confinement is costly, ineffective, and inhumane. That's one of the conclusions of Inside the Box, a new study from the ACLU New Mexico and the Center on Law and Poverty. The center's Gail Evans says more than 1,000 New Mexico inmates are in solitary confinement at any one time.
The average length of stay in solitary confinement in New Mexico in the prisons is 3 years, which is shocking.
Evans says solitary confinement, even for short periods, has lasting negative psychological impacts. Weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny today and tomorrow, with highs in the middle 60s. Overnight lows in the upper 30s. A 40% chance for showers arrives for Friday. I'm Tom Tropridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, all the major indices in negative territory. The Dow off 64 points at 15,403. The NASDAQ off 27 at 3,902. And the S&P 500 off 9 points. It stands at 1,745. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Santa Fe Art Institute hosts artist and cultural provocateur Dred Scott at SFAI. Scott's work stands on the lively boundaries between issues of polarization, exploitation, and intellectual development and participatory democracy. His exhibition entitled Money, Patriotism, Death, Polls, and Manifestos runs through November 22nd at SFAI. Learn more at sfai.org or call 424-5050. A message from the tax-exempt SFAI.
10 minutes past the hour, as at noon, now segues to today's feature stories. Of course, the big New Mexico story of the day is that hearing at the state Supreme Court, where it's expected the court will deliver the ultimate legal word on the constitutionality of marriage equality. Rejoining us here at the news desk is my KSFR news colleague, Tom Trowbridge. Tom, you were KSFR's man on the scene early this morning as a crowd began to assemble. Why don't you set up your report for us?
It was quite a scene. A lot of folks on hand in anticipation. Here's my report. Before the state Supreme Court building's ornate doors opened this morning, a large crowd gathered in anticipation of the legal arguments. Lee Durham with Equality New Mexico handed out coffee and donuts to those waiting. Durham was upbeat despite the early morning chill.
We are out here, came out here early morning before 7 a.m. as the sun was rising to have some coffee and donuts out for everyone who's waiting to get into the courthouse. We're calling it I Do Donuts and Coffee, and just kind of showing our support for marriage equality in New Mexico.
Durham's colleague behind the Equality New Mexico snack table, Marshall Martinez, was equally positive.
We knew that this is a historic day and very exciting for lots of people. Lots of people are going to be here. We have multiple watch parties happening around the city for folks who can't get into the courtroom, and just here to make sure that we share these moments with other people who are anticipating such a great day.
Overheard as the crowd gathered, discussion on how marriage equality came about in New Jersey. This week, its governor, Chris Christie, withdrew his challenge to legal same-sex marriage in that state, and clearly many outside the court wearing equal signs as a support of marriage equality were hopeful that New Mexico would join the East Coast state in legalization of same-sex unions. At the front of the line was Karen Schmicke, who drove with her partner from her home in Albuquerque.
And I'm first in line because my partner and I got married in Bernalillo. We're the first to get married in Bernalillo County. And I'll be 70 in January, and I like things to start happening.
Asked about her hopes as the court prepared to take on the issue, Schmicke said she wants marriage equality in New Mexico.
I think this is a historical moment we still have to find out the answer after today, but it's a marvelous opportunity.
But not all those waiting outside the court see things the same way. The Reverend Duncan Lanham of St. Thomas the Apostle Anglican Church in Santa Fe, for one.
I don't know what their decision will be, of course, and I'd like to simply see what their rationale is if they, in terms of some of their questions, and obviously I don't know what the lawyers will be saying to them, but I'm going to be interested in hearing it.
Reverend Lanham says he doesn't like the term marriage equality.
When you express it, as many do, in terms of marriage equality, I think that's the wrong approach, because God's word says something very different. In talking about a man should not lie with a man, a woman should not lie with a woman. That's God's word, not mine. And therefore, to talk about marriage equality, if that's contrary to what God's word says, then I don't think to say equality would be a fair approach to take. And our little congregation would certainly be of the view that I'm expressing at this point, that marriage is to be between a man and a woman.
It could take weeks or months for the court to reach a final decision. For KSFR, I'm Tom Tropridge.
Thank you for that, Tom. And with more on the same story, proceedings today at the court have been streamed on various websites. First up this morning was an attorney arguing against same-sex marriage, asserting that the principal reason for marriage is procreation. He went on to say that recognition of same-sex marriage would undermine the idea that children need a mother and a father. The justices challenged the idea. Here now is some of that exchange.
Undermine the idea that children need a mother and a father, and that there's something
you need. Can you explain that in straightforward terms?
Sure. When right now, the union of a man and a woman is one marriage in the state where you are. And that has an inherent tie to procreation, because those unions, unlike same-sex unions, have an inherent ability to naturally create children. So that's the first problem. By redefining marriage to be a genderless institution, there is no longer an inherent link between procreation and marriage. Once that link is severed, less and less opposite-sex couples will see a need to enter into marriage if they're raising children.
Why do you say that? Can you explain by allowing same-gender couples to have the benefits of marriage that would provide all these financial and governmental benefits, societal benefits, how that would discourage opposite-gender couples from being married? You still haven't articulated why that would stop someone. Someone saying, I don't want to get married here because same-gender couples can also get married.
That's not the concern at all, Your Honor. It's the redefining of the institution itself. If the institution has nothing to do, no inherent connection with procreation anymore, then opposite-sex couples will come to see less and less of a need.
Even though they can get community property benefits, they can get all the inheritance benefits, they get all these things that you say are provided as an incentive to keep heterosexuals to get married.
Yes, but over time, there's a rational concern that they will see less of a need to enter into the
Mr. Kemble, hasn't the legislature specifically rejected the marriage appropriation argument? In Section 40-1-16, they make it very clear. They expressly state that a child born to unwed parents shall have the same rights as a child born to married parents. So they've specifically rejected this marriage appropriation argument, haven't they?
And later, as an advocate for marriage equality spoke to the bench, Supreme Court Justice Daniels noted that there are many laws in our state's history that speak of rights conferred solely on the basis of gender that are no longer viewed as fair or enforceable.
The Marriage Act of 1862, for example, said that the husband gets to decide where the wife will live, and if she fails to obey him, he can go to court and enforce the right. And various other distinctions. There, a 1915 statute said that the husband has the exclusive right to decide what to do with the community property belonging to both of them. As I read the statutes, it appears that all those distinctions in rights, between rights of husbands and wives, have disappeared, and now they have equal rights. Am I correct in that, or are there still discriminations between husband and wife in our statutes?
Justice Daniels, you give yourself too little credit. You're way ahead. I think you're exactly right. That certainly, there's nothing on the face of the statutes anywhere in Chapter 40 that would indicate any of the kinds of unequal treatment between the male and female members of that relationship that existed in the past. There's nothing like that.
So it's no longer relevant whether one is the male partner or the female partner the way it once was, when you had different rights depending on whether you were born a man or born a woman and entered into marriage.
I think that's right. It's certainly not relevant to determining what rights the members of that relationship have. That's correct.
That's some of the dialogue taking place today at the state Supreme Court as the justices considered the legality of same-sex marriage. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
18 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. For some time now, UNM students have had a polling place on campus during general elections. In the recent City of Albuquerque municipal election, an on-campus site was denied. Joining us now to talk about this is Pat Davis, Executive Director of Progress Now New Mexico. Pat, tell us what happened to that polling site.
Well, earlier this year, Albuquerque City Clerk Amy Bailey proposed to the City Council a list of polling places for our fall elections. They included ones for the regular election that we just had in early October, and those were also incorporated into what could be our runoff election and any other ballot initiative elections that we might have in November. And even though they had a number of polling places across the city, they left one off for the City of Albuquerque, for UNM's campus or CNM's campus. And so when students went to go vote on October 8th, they realized that their polling place that they just naturally expected to be open was closed, and they were understandably upset. City municipal elections are run differently than general elections. So students that were used to, and not just students, but more than 80,000 people a day that use UNM's campus, faculty and staff and visitors, have had a polling place for years in the primary and general elections, and it's always been in this student union building. But the city has not consistently had a polling place. And then last year, you'll remember, was the first year that under new state laws, we had voting convenience centers, which meant people could vote anywhere. It wasn't just a precinct place. So the city had used UNM before, but only as a precinct voting place, meaning only basically the handful of students who were registered as municipal city voters could use that polling place. But when the county clerk, Maggie Oliver, chose voting convenience centers under the new laws for the general elections last year, she used UNM because it was such a dense population area, and it was one of the busiest in the state.
You mentioned the convenience law. That essentially means people in Albuquerque don't have to vote in the precinct in which they live, correct?
That's right, and it really did make it a lot easier because, for as you know, up here and in other places, most of the state use voting convenience centers in some fashion. And again, the one at UNM was one of the busiest in the state, which just means it's a natural fit for students and for municipalities like Albuquerque to say, hey, if we really want to encourage as many people as possible to vote, let's put it in the places where we can find the most people. But unfortunately, they didn't choose to do that.
How far did students, faculty, and staff at the school have to travel to get to a polling place?
Early voting, they actually had to, you would have, students would have had to get on a bus and go all the way downtown, you know, about 15 minutes on a bus ride. On election day, there was a polling place in a neighborhood a few blocks off campus, but it's in a construction zone. And a lot of students, as you know, just simply don't get into neighborhoods very often because they don't have a lot of a need to go there. It's not sort of across the street or down the where a lot of students go. It's in a residential neighborhood where a lot of faculty, staff, and others live. And so it was unfamiliar. It wasn't publicized. And again, you know, students expected to be able to vote where they've always been able to vote.
There was a lot of pressure to place a site on campus from various sources. Why didn't it become a reality?
We put out an alert through the Progress Now network late Friday and said, you know, that Councilor Ray Garduno, who's been a progressive champion and a voting rights champion for years, had proposed a resolution that would have added a polling place at the last minute for UNM students. And more than 1,000 people signed that. The Graduate and Professional Student Association worked with them over the weekend. They actually identified they volunteered to give up their office on campus, volunteers from their organization, and money to fund it. All they needed was the city clerk's okay. Unfortunately, despite a really long argument, and the Republican members of the city council in Albuquerque stood with their Republican city clerk and just said, too little, too late, we're not going to do this. And denied students what they had been asking for. And so it was really disappointing. I mean, there were dozens of people there that turned out and said, this is the right thing to do. Some really impassioned arguments from our city councilors, and the students that showed up were absolutely amazing because they took care of all the logistics and did it themselves. And they were ready to go, self-sustained, had a building, had a place, had the volunteers, and had the money. All they needed was the okay, and unfortunately they wouldn't give us that.
And what were the reasons given that it shouldn't pass?
Oh, there were lots of excuses. It was nearly an hour of debate at the end of the night, running up until 11 o'clock at night. But the bottom line is, Ms. Bailey, the city clerk, simply said, you know, she didn't think about it, and it wasn't something that was on her radar until students raised the issue. She suggested perhaps that it would be too much trouble or too hard. One Republican counselor, the Janice Arnold Jones, who's up for the runoff election, who has a dog in this fight, said shockingly that essentially voting should be hard. She said, you know, you got to do a little work to be able to go vote. Most of the students are young and spry. It's okay if they have to walk a little farther to go to their polling place. I mean, it was really some shocking things that we all sort of sitting there shook our heads and said this is unacceptable and really something none of us really expected to hear from an elected official. And, our, you know, we're nonpartisan, but our, really our Democrats deserve a lot of credit. As Councilor Garduno said, the city council approved the original bill that, that placed polling places around the city. And it was really something that no one really recognized until students stood up and said this is wrong. But Democrats in this case get credit for trying to say, let's fix this.
And where do you go from here with this issue?
Well, unfortunately, that's probably for our students, at least, the last answer. And that means that a number of organizations like ours at Progress Now, some voting rights organizations, we were supported by Common Cause, and they deserve a great shout-out for their work. But groups like Progress Now, Common Cause, the GPSA, and student groups are really going to have to rally and turn down students and say that they need to vote in spite of all the hurdles that are put in their place. So I think you're going to see a renewed effort. There have already been conversations among organizers and student groups about how to turn students out in the upcoming election, how to educate them about the nearest polling places, how to get them there and get them back to campus in time to go to class. It's a big hurdle, and it's really a lot of work and a lot of organizing and a lot of money that a lot of us are going to have to expend that really people in charge of running fair and open elections really have the opportunity and the responsibility to do. But where they won't do it, we'll do it.
Pat Davis, Executive Director of Progress Now New Mexico, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM Resources Foundation and the PNM Fund, awarding more than $1 million since 2008 to New Mexico nonprofit organizations, helping them to decrease energy costs so they can invest more in their missions and programs. HomeWise Inc. in Santa Fe is one of the 57 Reduce Your Use grant recipients in 2013. To see all of the grant recipients, visit pnm.com/foundation.
26 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Many areas in New Mexico are devoid of trees for a number of reasons. There is grant money available to allow for the planting of trees on public lands. Here is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
There are a lot of public lands in our state that are treeless or nearly so. Some are caused by wildfires, some by our areas of natural high desert terrain. The state of New Mexico Forestry Department has a program to help plant trees in public spots that need them. Dan Ware is with the Forestry Department.
We've just announced our annual Forest Relief Grant recipients, and this year we're very pleased to announce that Rio Rancho, Las Vegas, the Lordsburg Municipal Schools, Fort Sumner, and Raton are the recipients. And what this is funding to the tune of $27,380 that will be used to plant trees in various projects throughout these communities. And the New Mexico Forest Relief Grant Program is completely privately funded. So no taxpayer dollars go into this program itself. It's all donated through private individuals or corporations or businesses, and every single cent that is donated goes toward planting trees where they are needed. The grant program funds projects that are on public lands, and those can be schoolyards, parks, city streets, that sort of thing, any place where the public can access them. It's generally used by communities to help develop or enhance their existing community forest program, or to establish a community forest program. But many times we see these projects used for things like setting up windbreaks at sports complexes where they're needed, or parks, or even solid waste facilities, something to kind of beautify and hide that those kinds of areas. So really the trees are meant to enhance existing projects or programs. But we see in many cases where they're the only trees that are planted. And so that's really what one of the best things about this program is.
The department has been giving the grants for a number of years.
We've been doing the relief grant program since 1990. That's when it was passed by the legislature. And it wasn't funded, so that was the whole goal, was to raise private funds to pay for this program. And typically, projects are eligible for up to $6,000 in grant funding. And I believe a few years ago it was up to $8,000, but with the way the economy has gone, sometimes the donations slow a bit because folks have other uses for their money. So we had to lower that to $6,000, but we've been able to consistently do this since 1990, and we've been able to fund the planting of hundreds of, if not thousands of trees around New Mexico in our urban forest areas. What typically happens is we will call for grant proposals in the spring, and then through the course of the summer we receive those, and then that's cut off in September, and then we have a group. State Forestry has a representative on this committee, but it's made up of people from outside our agency, and they vet the grant proposals, and the ones that have the best use or are the most complete are the ones that are chosen, and it's typically five or six projects a year.
On another important topic, Ware added that he has a major concern about next year's wildfire potential.
We had a very brief but active fire season where we saw a lot of fire activity in a short amount of time, and that burned a lot of acres. Now, I think overall we did better than we did last year, but the danger was still there, and I think with the rains that we received this summer and the potential for a rather lackluster winter, we could see an early start to the fire season. So we don't want folks to become complacent and just kind of let it go. We need folks to be very fire-wise and self-aware about their surroundings and the vegetation that's growing on their land and how that could affect a wildfire.
For more information on the grants, as well as wildfire prevention and information, go to the department's website.
The website is nmforestry.com, and when you're on the website, you can click a link at the top. It's Forest Management Programs. There's lots of great information there about the relief program, our tree seedling program, all of our different fire programs, that sort of thing. So we encourage folks to check.
Dan Ware with New Mexico Forestry. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
El Dorado artists are packing up their magic and bringing it to Santa Fe. Once again, they'll hold their annual Fall Fine Arts and Crafts Show at St. John's United Methodist Church on Old Pecos Trail at Cordova. Over 40 artists will show work in a multitude of genres, including painting, ceramics, glass, photography, handcrafted jewelry, folk art, and much more. The show runs Friday, October 25th from 3 to 7 and continues Saturday, the 26th from 9 to 5. More at eldoradoarts.org, a message from the tax-exempt El Dorado Arts and Crafts Association.
12:32 here in the KSFR newsroom, and just past the bottom of the hour is the perfect opportunity for us all to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I haven't really noticed them in movie theaters anymore, but there was a time when movie theaters would often have a crying room where parents could bring their crying children and still watch the movie with their crying children while not disturbing the rest of the audience with their crying children. No doubt videos, DVDs, movies on demand, Netflix, ad infinitum killed the need for a crying room. Parents could now watch new releases while staying at home with their crying children, where they belong anyway. That said, I think the gym where I go should install a cheering, yelling, booing, boisterous commentary room for all those seemingly adults, mostly male, who feel it necessary to loudly express themselves while watching a pro football game in a public place that is not a bar. Then again, maybe the gym shouldn't call it the cheering room, for pro football crying room would probably fit quite well. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge and Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more News Oven for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.